AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Welcome to another episode of Routes Through Pokemon. I'm Rosella.
I'm Shaylock.
I'm Ruby.
And today we have with us the triumphant return of
Frank Future.
Well, welcome back, Frank.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be back.
We are too, and I think it's quite awesome that you are returning along with our subject today of Mewtwo.
Yes.
Since last time you were here, you did the first movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back.
That's right, and this one is pretty much just almost a sequel to the others. It picks up right where the other one left off, at least from Mewtwo's perspective.
Yes, yeah, it very much is a sequel to that, a follow-up. Just not quite a movie, because it's only 60 minutes long. So.
Right.
But besides that, we will also be covering two Pikachu shorts. We have Delibird's Dilemma and Snorlax Snowman. And one of those even gives us a tally marker, which is fun. All right, but before we jump in, how are things going in the life of Frank Future now that you're back?
Yeah, things are going great. One kind of cool thing is I started playing Pokemon Gold along with your podcast episodes. So I thought that that'd be kind of fun to kind of play along as you guys go. Of course, I'm trying to go with where you are in the story. And I know that the games are, you know, every, you know, handful of episodes because you go through the anime and the manga.
But
I'm following along. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, are you playing Pokemon Gold or you're playing Pokemon Heart Gold?
Great question. So I'm actually playing Heart Gold because I had never played those remakes before. So I know that there are some differences. I'm not exactly sure what they are. So far, I don't feel like I've noticed a lot as I'm just playing through this regular story.
Besides like graphics, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's full color graphics. You know, some of the animations are a little bit different. Yeah, it's fun. So I'm through the third gym. So
In
Goldenrod. So I beat Whitney.
Nice.
Yep. And what's really funny is that I've played this game before. I played the original Gold. And I have forgotten a decent amount of it. And I got to Whitney and I thought, this is weird. Why does she only have two Pokemon? And I'm like, this will be easy. And I, you know, thought that I was confident. And I was like, I'll just use my Geodude. You know, he's got a fighting move and it'll be no problem. And so I defeat her first Pokemon. I'm like, well, this is going to be so easy. Why is this gym even here? And then out pops Miltank. And I'm like, I remember Whitney. Because when I was a kid and played it the first time, Miltank just destroyed me. Just rolled out over and over, and any Pokemon I had in my party that I switched in was killed in one hit. Because surprisingly, Miltank is high in speed also, and a lot of times will go first. And
sure.
And so if rollout gets too strong, you're just toast. And I thought,
because rollout just gets stronger the longer it goes, right?
Exactly. Each time it goes, the next time it's stronger and stronger. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm a seasoned veteran, right? I don't need to try too hard at this. I'll just show up and win. Boy, was I wrong. Geodude, like, she kept using, you know, a couple healing items on Miltank, and rollout got strong enough, and it wiped out my party. Same as it did 25 years ago.
That's hilarious.
So I'm like, well, this is embarrassing. But then I played her the second time and won very easily because I remembered what to do. So,
well, and you're in good company, it sounds like, because, I mean, you commented, I think, even on our YouTube episode where I was talking about how I learned that supposedly Whitney's supposed to be hard at first and everybody gets wiped out by rollout. And Rubia and I just didn't experience that. And so it was just, I was confused, but A lot of people do.
Yeah, when you said that in the episode, I laughed out loud. I'm like, that was me. I definitely had that happen. But also, I thought it'd be kind of fun to share at this point my party in the game. And I'm not going through and collecting all the Pokemon just yet. I'm more so just wanting to go along the story with you.
Yeah, sure.
I picked Totodile as my starter.
Well, that makes Ruby happy.
Yep. So, and I got Croconaw right now at this point. And the other five are Hoot Hoot, Geodude, a Ghastly, an Unknown. And I'm not sure if you guys know about this, but there's a really strong Pokemon that you can catch this early in the game. And I'm not sure if you've heard of this Pokemon or not, but it's Bellsprout. So I have a Bellsprout.
Nice. Yeah, I think currently I'm running around with a Bellsprout because I need to evolve it because I think Ruby already evolved hers once. But yeah, that's your party sounds very similar to what like we were running, like Geodude and Ghastly for sure, our starters, things like that. Although I did bring Machop into that fight with Whitney because I'm like, oh, she's a normal. Well, I better bring him with.
I did that too.
Yeah, would have been smart for me to do.
And I definitely wanted to keep Geodude with because I was like, well, normal attacks are weak to the rock stuff. I know that, so this should be fine.
Right, exactly. And I use Geodude through the trainers leading up to Whitney. And, you know, I fight every trainer that I can along the way. And I thought, oh, this will be no problem. I'll just keep walking through the trainers. And I went into battle with a weaker Geodude with less PP. And it was just a mistake.
Was Ruby, did she only have two Pokemon in gold and silver as well? I don't even remember.
I almost feel like she had three, but that could just be because of watching the anime.
Yeah, maybe. I think it was a Clefairy and a Miltank, because a lot of the people in that gym, I think, had like Clefairy and Jigglypuff.
Yeah, because she had a cute Pokemon, so yeah, I think it was a Clefairy. I don't remember for sure.
But yeah, in the anime, it was really weird because they included a Nidoran, is that right?
I think so.
Or Nidorina, maybe?
It might have been a Nidorina. I couldn't remember if it was an evolved one or not. But it was just so weird because that is not a normal type Pokemon.
Well, she was different.
Level one is, I think, right? The Nidoran male and female, are they just normal?
I thought they started out as poison right off the bat.
You could be right.
And then they get like the ground typing in their final stage or something?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I don't remember for sure. But all right, well, cool. Have you been playing through the max out season in Pokemon Go?
I have been playing Pokemon Go still. I sign in there every day. I haven't been able to get out and about as often recently, so it's a lot more of just kind of checking my surroundings, you know, making sure I get a catch every day, things like that. But I'm actually pretty behind on some of the regular research. But I still make sure I sign in, catch, you know, do the community days when I can, but, you know, around my area, not as many chances for shinies and things like that, but I still play.
Yeah, we were playing Pokemon Go during one of our recent recordings that hasn't come out yet, I don't think, but we were catching Mankey on the Mankey community day while in the middle of recording, but that means we were definitely not running around. We were just catching what was in the area, and I did manage to get one shiny out of it, I think, so that was fun. Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see how, I think starting tomorrow, we have some of the Safari Zone stuff going on. Because they had that event over in Japan or something, but then they'll have the Safari Balls and stuff in the game.
Yeah, that's right. Because I think I saw today, I had the notification of the Max Out event ending today. So the new one would start tomorrow.
The Max Out is, I think, the season, which ends in the season. That ends in the beginning of December, I think, yeah.
But other than that, nothing really new in the Pokemon world necessarily. Opening some packs of cards here and there, you know, when I feel the itch to pick some up, which is more often than I probably should, but it's fun.
I like
collecting the cards still. So
I'm a little disappointed in you actually, Frank, because you know we were playing and sending gifts quite a bit back and forth, and then it wasn't until we were doing that for a little bit that I think your wife started sending gifts and stuff back and forth, and I'm already best friends with her, and yet we still aren't.
Oh, that surprises me, actually. So I thought she hadn't played for a little while. I'm going to have to, you know, ask her about that. But yeah, that's, you know, the product of having a full box, and when I'm not catching Pokemon as often, I don't go through my item inventory as often, and then I'm not opening gifts very often. And
I hear that. I've been kind of slacking off the last few weeks on the gifts.
But I should, just for you, I should stop everything I'm doing and become best friends.
We're getting close. We're getting close.
We are.
The other day, I caught a Galarian Articuno.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
You were on the rock.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
And my Master Ball froze, and I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because he is the Master Ball.
It froze in midair, and we're like, is it just going to disappear?
And I still caught it.
I've run into, like, 3 or so Galarian Zapdos and a Galarian Articuno, but I have not been using Master Balls now, and I've failed every time to catch them.
Well, you have one Galarian Zapdos.
I'm very jealous because I have run into all 3, but I have not used any Master Ball, and I have not gotten close. It's always been maybe one shake if I'm lucky, and then burst out, and then they run away every single time.
Well, they are, they have a high flea rate, which is part of the issue there.
I need more Master Ball so I can catch Galarian, Moltres, and Zap.
I don't think I've even run into a Moltres, Galarian one. But then, the reason I don't use the Master Ball anymore, even when it's when they show up, is because now the shiny ones are out there, and they're going to be even more rare, so I got to save the Master Ball for a shiny Galarian bird.
A lot more Master Balls. I did not know there was shiny, and now I want them.
Yeah, they released sometime during this Pokemon Go season.
Yeah, I haven't caught a shiny Pokemon in Pokemon Go in a long time. I think my last one was at least, maybe even like 2 months ago, I think is the last shiny that I've caught. And it was a Psyduck.
Ooh, I've been looking for one of those, but I haven't been able to manage to get one.
I want a shiny Psyduck.
So do I.
So it's one of the cooler ones, I think.
All right, well, that's cool. Any other things that you girls want to talk about?
I mean, not with me, but my little brother, he plays Pokemon Go, and he found a legendary bird, but he was sending gifts or something, and just ran away. And then the bird wasn't there when he was about to catch it.
He literally ran towards Shaylock, and is like, I see a bird. And he was hatching some eggs, he was sending gifts, and he was running away from it.
Well, and then he ran out of room for his Pokemon, so then I had to try to delete a Pokemon so he could have room to catch that one, and by then it was way too late. The bird was gone.
Wow. Talk about heartbreak.
Right?
I don't think he cared that much.
Yeah, he's pretty casual. He just does his own thing, and if it was a shiny Onix, then he'd be super upset.
Yep, that's true. This is one thing he'd play
Even
for.
If it was just a regular Onix, probably.
Yeah, probably.
True. He's a little obsessed with that particular Pokemon.
Shiny Onix is cool too.
I mean, before we started like really watching through the anime for the podcast, the kids had watched a lot of season 1, and all of them have seen Master the Unexpected episode more times than they care to count, because their little brother wanted to watch it all the time because it had all the Onixes in it. All right, well, if that's all we got for updates in there, then let's go ahead and start diving into the episodes and the special. All right. So first we will be covering the Pikachu short, Delibird's Dilemma. So we start off with a narration from Santa Claus this time. Or at least that's what I was led to believe by the way he was talking.
Ho, ho, ho.
I thought it was Delibird.
You thought Delibird was narrating?
I would Delibird be narrating.
Yeah, I thought that was what he was thinking.
Anyway. So, apparently it's the day before Christmas, and Santa Claus is really down on Christmas Eve, apparently, because something always bad happens. And by down on it, I mean, like, he's not feeling depressed on Christmas Eve. He's just always like, Christmas Eve sucks.
He's just like, something's bad's gonna happen. I know it. I know it's gonna happen.
It happens every year. Like the night when Jack stole Christmas.
You ever see Nightmare Before Christmas, Frank?
A lot of times. Yep, that is for a while there, my wife considered that her favorite movie.
Oh, cool. We have a tradition of watching it after we finish trick-or-treating on Halloween.
That's a good tradition.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. So we see Delibird flying with a bag of gifts, and then we see Ash and company's Pokemon bowling snowballs at glass bottles. And at first, Santa is sure Bulbasaur is going to get hit by the snowball bowling ball instead, but Pikachu bowls a strike first, and then Cyndaquil goes, and it does go off course, but it doesn't end up hitting anything. But then Totodile is bringing over a big ol' one inside his mouth. He loses balance and falls forward, and so then, like, basically water gun or something shoots out and smacks the snowball way up into the air and knocks Delibird out of the sky.
Santa was just waiting for something bad to happen, so every time something might have been bad, he's like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. He's like, oh, I wonder if the Bulbasaur is going to get hit. And I just thought, oh, that's kind of a pessimistic problem to think of.
Right?
But he definitely...
Yeah, Santa's being very pessimistic.
Yeah, he's quite negative. He knew something bad was going to happen.
And then we get to see Meowth walking along with Wobbuffet, and they were happy that some Skarmory left from, like, wherever it was before, I don't know. But then it turns out it's back, and it's perched in their way, sleeping. So they don't want to wake it up. But then Delibird slams into Meowth and Wobbuffet, and the snowball that knocked Delibird out of the sky lands right on top of Skarmory. So the steel bird beats its wings and sends Wobbuffet and Meowth flying off, as if they were blasting off again.
Ding!
This also sends Delibird flying off, and the good Pokemon go to rescue him, but his presents are also blown every which way. So they befriend the Delibird and offer to help him collect the presents. There's one point, so we get, like, some song playing as they, like, go hunting for this presents, and Totodile gets one off a boat after swimming for it.
That would be cool.
Probably not to Totodile, he's probably made for that.
But it would be cool!
And there's a really amusing moment where Psyduck is looking and he finds a line of gloom marching along, and so he falls in behind them and marches as well, as if he's part of the group.
Oh, Psyduck.
Bulbasaur stops them before they wander too far with Psyduck. Bulbasaur is good at protecting Pokemon. I mean, that's what he did before Ash got him.
That's why Bulbasaur is the best Pokemon.
Right?
I like how at the beginning of, like, all the shows and stuff, he's like, I'll choose Charmander, Squirtle, or Bulbasaur, and he gets Pikachu, and now he's catching all of them.
No, that's what happens in the video game Pokemon Yellow. You get Pikachu, and then throughout the rest of the game, you do pick up the other three.
Isn't that kind of what happens in Let's Go Pikachu?
Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee is definitely based off of, or like a remake of Pokemon Yellow. Because in Pokemon Yellow, Gary, or the rival, or whatever, gets Eevee while you get Pikachu. And so Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee makes it so you can choose which one you end up with. You either get Pikachu and he gets Eevee, or you get Eevee and he gets Pikachu.
I would choose Eevee.
Me too.
Eevee's my favorite, I would choose him.
Yeah, but me and Ruby got Let's Go Pikachu.
Yep, we got it for Christmas.
That's because you didn't know that you guys...
Liked Eevee.
Liked Eevee that much. And I did, so I got Let's Go Eevee.
Well, yeah, Pikachu...
My wife and I got those two games as well. We each got one, and I definitely got Let's Go Eevee.
Good man, good man.
Yep, I also like Eevee. Eevee's a very easy Pokemon to like in a way because of all its variations.
Yep.
You can really choose the path that you want with that Pokemon. It makes it so much fun.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason I always liked him so much is because he had, like, so much potential. Because you could go in so many different directions. Well, originally it was only three directions, but still.
Even the three were cool.
The three directions was Jolteon, Vaporeon, and Flareon.
Correct.
I would choose Flareon.
And I like Jolteon.
Yeah, Jolteon's pretty cool. I'd probably go with Vaporeon, though.
Which direction do you go... Frank?
In the original three, I actually probably would do Flareon.
Oh, so you're in line with Rosella on that one.
Yay!
Yeah,
it was weird because when we played through Red and Blue, I expected Ruby to go with Vaporeon, but we were about to hit the grass gym, so she's like, I'm going Flareon.
I what? I chose Flareon?
Yes, you did.
He's like my last choice. I want to change the look of Eevee, and Flareon just kind of poofs up.
Oh! Speaking of evolutions, have you been aware of some of the leaks that came out from Game Freak? Like there was a big data leak?
No, I hadn't seen anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about things they cut from some of the games they wanted to put in them and things like that. But one of the things, I think it was with Sun and Moon, is they were actually going to have a flying type Eevee evolution.
Oh.
But they scrapped it because the design was too similar to some fan-made ones out there or something like that, and so it was possibly too costly to include it.
Just change the design.
Yeah.
They should just make every type of Eevee.
Oh, I agree.
Then there could be ghost Eevee.
Yep.
Dragon Eevee.
Oh, yeah.
That's
what Ruby wants.
I would love a Dragon Eevee.
Anyway. Back to the episode.
Sorry.
So Noctowl is flying around scouting and using his like special vision to locate gifts, and he finds one in a tree. And Geodude headbutts the tree and knocks a ton of snow onto Psyduck. And then the present lands on top of it.
Did anyone else think it was funny that he did a headbutt instead of just punching the tree? The first thing why not punch the tree?
I personally liked it because I'm like, oh good, they're headbutting trees like you're supposed to do because that's the move you get in Johto.
Oh, good call. Yeah.
I like it when they do that. I think there's an episode two where they tackle a tree or like somebody says, tackle that tree. But like the animation, it shows them run their head right into it like a headbutt. And I'm like, why didn't you just call it headbutt? What the heck are you doing?
I think wasn't that in the Farfetch'd episode?
I don't remember.
So question, is that Noctowl shiny?
Yes.
And there's sparkles every time he comes out of the Pokeball.
It's so pretty.
Yeah, I think we covered that episode before the movie where he catches that Noctowl.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a shiny one, which we have not caught any shiny Pokemon in our regular playing of Johto yet. All right, so yeah, all the snow lands on top. And then we get a distracted Pokemon moment as Cyndaquil ends up falling asleep while they're searching for gifts.
Come on, Cyndaquil.
Wait, why do you fall asleep?
Because Cyndaquil's always falling asleep.
Cyndaquil's tired.
So I thought that was fun. I love it when Cyndaquil's just like snoozing away like that.
So is he super energized in the morning?
I don't know. So then they find another gift on some clothesline, but an Aipom gets to it first. So they throw snowballs at him, and he retaliates, but they eventually get him, and Pikachu saves Aipom from a hard landing, and the Pokemon get the present. Then there's only 10 minutes left, and all the presents have been found except one. Noctowl finds it in another tree, but it was stuck, and so it tumbles towards the ground. The Pokemon keep it from hitting the ground, but it almost goes over a cliff. Totodile catches it, only to have all the other Pokemon crash into him from behind, and he loses it over the cliff.
Wait, what if one of those gifts were glass?
Yeah, well, let's not think about that.
But they would break.
They're probably toys for kids, it's fine. There's probably not too much glass.
It is funny that they're trying to save the gift from falling after how aggressively they're trying to rip it out of the tree.
Yes, I agree. But fortunately, the Aipom that they rescued from getting hurt too bad is there, and it catches it and brings it back to them.
Yay, Aipom.
And it was just in time, and Delibird hops into Santa's sleigh that is being pulled by a Stantler, just like the last one we saw with a Santa in the episode.
Except only one Stantler.
It was only one Stantler that time, too. It was a six Stantler.
Oh, that's
it was
right.
Like a Rapidash or a Ponyta.
That was a different episode of the anime with Jinx. But when the other short we saw with Santa was another Johto episode, and it had Stantler. Because Stantler didn't exist at first, so they went with something else.
Makes sense. But Stantler is the perfect one.
And that was that episode. So then we have Snorlax Snowman. And this is kind of like Frosty the Snowman, like the cartoon.
Frosty the Snowman was a happy, jolly soul.
Now we're at a Pokemon Center, and outside the Pokemon are building a Snow Snorlax. Then, later on, the Pokemon are sleeping inside, and it's dark out, and suddenly a snowy Snorlax shows up outside the window. The Pokemon wake up and join the Snow Snorlax outside. They all go to follow it up a hill, and Psyduck has trouble and rolls back down. But eventually they get to a tree way out at the end of a point overlooking the sea. There's a single fruit there, and they try to get it, but it's stuck. When it snaps free, it goes over the cliff, and Snow Snorlax rushes over to grab it. This causes the point that they're on to break, and they all fall and end up sledding down the other side on top of Snorlax.
Like in Frosty the Snowman, except it was one person riding on the snow.
Oh, I don't even remember that. Then they land on a chunk of ice that breaks free, and they all go sailing off, and they all start yelling at Snorlax, who just drops down and goes to sleep. The rest of the Pokemon are enamored by the beautiful lights in the sky, until they're all caught up in a whirlpool. Eventually, Snorlax wakes up, and he breathes an ice blast into the center of the whirlpool, which freezes it all, and so then the Pokemon can walk along the bottom of it and can see all the water Pokemon swimming on the other side like a giant aquarium.
And Cyndaquil is, like, getting mad at the Pokemon that's swimming around.
Oh, is he? I don't remember that.
He, like, puffs up with his fire, and he's like, Cyndaquil!
How cool is that? I mean, imagine being in the middle of the ocean or sea or wherever they are and being able to go underneath the water and look around at all those Pokemon swimming.
Yeah, it's such a cool... I mean, I would love to do that in real life with just, you know... I mean, obviously not Pokemon, but just sea creatures.
I mean, if it was Pokemon, I would not be sad.
I mean, it's cool enough to go to some of those aquariums where you're, like, you go through a tunnel so they're all swimming above you and stuff too. I mean, that's all really cool. But to be out actually in the ocean area, that'd be pretty nifty.
So it's natural.
Or like on those boats that have like a glass bottom.
Yeah, something like that. That would be cool.
That would be weird to me.
I've never done that.
Me neither, but it looks cool.
I also like that there was a Dratini that showed up in the water.
That was super cool.
Because of the banned episode, we never got a Dratini, so this would be the first time to see one. Because we saw a Dratini and a Dragonair in that banned episode of the Safari Zone. But you have to watch that one in Japanese, because they didn't even bother to translate it. And then you finally can see a Dragonair in the short right before the Pokemon 2000 movie. So, they eventually leave their cool little makeshift aquarium, and Totodile shoots water and Snorlax freezes it for Chikorita to Razor Leaf a boat-like shape out of it, and they all climb aboard and sail off. And then I think this might be our first sighting of Remoraid as they swim alongside the ice ship for a bit.
What's a Remoraid?
It looks like a fish. Like, it looks like a typical fish you'd find out around here.
Just a regular fish.
Pretty much. There's nothing too exciting about it. It's not bright colored. It's just kind of like that murky-ish greeny color or whatever.
I think I know where they got the idea.
The ice ship starts to break apart and they all sink, only to be rescued by a pair of Lapras. And then they pass by a cliff that has a bunch of Snorlax sitting atop it and waving. And then they reach the shore where there is a ton of those Snorlax. And the main Snorlax joins them and waves goodbye as the rest of the Pokemon return home aboard the Lapras. Then they all fall asleep while riding the Lapras, and they wake up at the Pokemon Center as if it had all been a dream, including the fact that the Snorlax they built is back where they left it, just a pile of snow. And this time, when they go up the hill in the morning or whatever, was it the morning? I don't remember. Anyway, they go back up the hill to see the Snorlax, and Psyduck is lagging behind again, but it ends up being Pikachu that ends up rolling back down a little way instead of Psyduck. And then they get to their Snorlax, and that's the end.
So it definitely suggests that it was all just a dream, but when they get to the snow Snorlax, isn't he kind of now holding his hand up?
He's waving.
Yeah.
I was like going to ask that, but I was thinking and I didn't really remember the beginning part of it. So.
Sure. So yeah, there's a lot that suggests it was a dream, but then there's also a little clues that it might not have been one.
What if it was a dream? But
I don't think it was a dream. I think it was all real.
I think it's one of those things where they do leave it that way so you can interpret it how you want to.
Make up your own story.
Which, for some people, that's like their least favorite kind of story. They're like, no, just tell me the answer and give me an end.
No, I like making up stories.
Not me, man. Give me the right answer.
Alrighty. And now for the special Mewtwo Return. So we start off with Mewtwo in the lab again from the first movie. And Mewtwo gives us a narration of what occurred with his creation and how he destroyed the lab and then Giovanni training him and controlling him. We see his escape and how he created his island of his clone Pokemon and how his clones fought the regular Pokemon and he battled Mew and then Ash sacrificed himself to stop all the fighting. And then he wiped out everyone's memories and took his clones to live somewhere in peace.
I had forgotten that he wiped people's memory.
Well, that's why they reminded us at the beginning of the special.
Maybe he wiped your memory, too.
Ooh. But he knows that one still remembers him because he wasn't there to get wiped. Giovanni.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So then we cut to a satellite picture, well, a bunch of satellite pictures of a remote area of the Johto region, and Giovanni is sitting and watching while some Team Rocket lady is next to him, concealed somewhat in shadow, and she's explaining what they're looking at. Then the satellite zooms in and Mewtwo is visible. And then we have Mewtwo being a bit melodramatic at that location about how the place is beautiful, but that he can't actually judge that because he's not like other creatures, so how can he know what's beautiful? If you think it's beautiful, it's beautiful. You're fine, kid.
Yeah. One thing that was kind of noteworthy, I thought, because when we talked about this during the first Mewtwo movie, it's now pretty clear that all he did was wipe their memory and just put all the people back where they were before with no time manipulation or anything like that. It was just he staged them all back on the pier in the first movie and just wiped their memory.
This definitely does seem to lend to that being the most likely conclusion of how everything went down. I think there's still enough. It's not explained in enough detail that you can get away with some other theories, but I think this does point mostly to that being what happened. I agree.
Although I'd like time manipulation, but that's...
Well, yeah, me too, obviously. But we have to wait till like the fourth movie for a little bit of that or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I'll be back for that one for sure. You tell me when.
Sounds good.
Is that the one with your buddy that you haven't...
Oh, Celebi? Yeah, I know it has Celebi in it. That's all I really know about the movie. And then he's all like, yeah, he's unique and special. No one can understand him. How many times are people like that in the real world?
Me and my mom were sitting there. We're like, oh, Daddy, he's just like you.
He loves to be dramatic.
Well, not dramatic, but
I don't know. He just wanted to play alone, away from everybody, because everybody's stupid. That sounds about accurate.
And he's not like everyone else. He's some thing of science.
Are you a thing of science, Daddy?
Well, I guess, according to them. And then they maintain continuity of the three evolved starter Pokemon clones having the strange markings like they had in Mewtwo Strikes Back, like the Venusaur, the Charizard, and the Blastoise.
Yeah, the clone marking.
Yeah, but only those three. Nobody else has them. Although I did notice throughout this movie that the clone Pikachu's black tips were different than regular Pikachu. So with the strange markings, I was wondering now, because we talked about it before with that whole prequel where the human attempts at cloning Squirtle, Bulbasaur, and stuff had the same markings, but they supposedly died, so they couldn't be the same Pokemon. I was wondering, maybe he purposely made these three with those clone markings because it reminded him of his friends from, like, even though he doesn't necessarily remember that time either, like, he has parts of it that are, like, lodged in his memory, so maybe it was kind of like that's what they look like.
That would make sense.
Or maybe that's just what genetically things do with those three Pokemon.
Well, it seems weird that it'd be those three specific, but...
I agree. I think he did it on purpose.
So then, Mewtwo wants to remain in that location in secret, because if they don't, then he and his clone Pokemon cannot live in peace. And then we get this title of this special, which is designed similar to the Mewtwo Strikes Back title, except this one, of course, says Mewtwo Returns, but it had the same kind of, like, flair from that era of cartoon movie making. And then we cut to the gang walking through some forest, as they like to do. And the narrator tells us they are on their way into an unforgettable adventure. And I just thought that was funny because they forgot the last time that they hung out with Mewtwo. So then they find Unity Canyon. Apparently the bus goes by once a month, which seems like a really bad business plan, but I don't know. And it's the only way to get through the canyon, supposedly.
Well, not really.
I've since learned that supposedly in the Japanese version they say it comes by once a week, which makes more sense to me.
Oh yeah, that would make a lot more sense.
I don't know why they changed it to month, but they did.
What would be on the other side of the canyon that would be worth waiting a month for?
Well, if this special lands where it does according to the episodes we're watching, then this is still part of the same mountain range they have to finish getting through to get to Ecruteak City. So it's part of their path to Ecruteak.
Okay.
But that's, like, the movie and everything, like, it's outside of a lot of the information from the anime, so, like, who knows, really. But they place it here, and they had just gone into some mountain, this area, to get across it to get to Ecruteak. So that would be my theory. It's part of their journey to get the badges.
Makes sense. I just think from the perspective of the people that decide to have the bus trip once a month.
Sure.
Like, how they must only need to go once a month. But people are on their journey for the Pokemon League. I mean, you think that you'd get people at least every week.
I agree. And then they see the bus show up and go by, and so they hurry to try to catch up with it. And a storm breaks out, and spying on them is, of course, Team Rocket. They're sitting pretty chill under an umbrella until a huge gust of wind comes through and sends them all flying off, and Team Rocket is blasting off again!
Ding! Ding.
Yeah, so Meowth is talking about all the different weather conditions there. Do they ever say what causes the different weather conditions? Why it varies so intensely? Typhoons, blizzards?
I don't think they explain it. And I know when I was watching it, my first instinct was, well, of course, Mewtwo's messing with it to keep people out.
Right.
But that doesn't seem to line up with everything else they talk about, because even the lady's like, oh yeah, it's been like this forever. And Mewtwo hasn't been there long enough for this to be like what everybody knows happens all the time there.
Yeah, and Mewtwo has a comment a little bit after this about, oh, it looks like the storm's calming down or something like that. So he clearly must not have anything to do with it. But it's weird what would cause it, especially to be being such a pure place. You know, you'd almost think there'd be no crazy weather.
Maybe it's like Ho-Oh or Lugia protecting the nice clean water and protecting the world.
It probably has something to do with it being mountainous range, like just the way the wind blows off of the peaks and stuff could be part of it.
I could see definitely like the idea possibly just being like, well, the world tries, like, nature protecting itself and protecting its special resources kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that probably makes sense. I mean, it obviously is a wonder of the world. What do they call it? You know, the special place in Johto, greatest natural wonder?
Oh, yeah, something like that. I don't remember. Okay, so back to the bus, we see a woman in a raincoat say that there are no more passengers showing up, and the weather is getting bad, so the bus driver lady should just get going.
Even though it's technically early for them to leave.
Correct. And then the gang rushes in just too late to catch the bus. Earlier, while they were running through the storm, Brock discovered that his frying pan could be a drying pan, because he uses it to put over his head to block off the rain. Now, the reason I only bring this up is because he offers to share it with the lady. He's like, there's plenty of room under his drying pan to stay dry if they get real close together.
And it's probably keeping a few strands of his head dry, or his hair. But, like, it's not keeping him dry at all.
It's probably keeping his head perfectly dry, but the shoulders and everything else.
Classic Brock.
Oh, yeah. And so the Misty has to yank him back by his ear in another babysitting Brock moment.
She should get her hammer back.
What hammer?
That she used to babysit Brock one time.
Yeah, she smashed him with a hammer one time. It was hilarious. Well, a mallet, I guess. Ash wants to catch up to the bus, but the lady says that won't work, and so she offers for them all to get out of the rain in, like, this cabin thing that they keep for those that are waiting for the bus to come. And then we see the bus get picked up by a cyclone or something, but Mewtwo, watching from his hideout screen, he uses his power to save the bus and the people in it. Clone Pikachu, or Clone Kachu?
Pikachu 2?
P-Clone Chu? Clone Kachu asks why Mewtwo saved them, and the response from Mewtwo is for protection, because an accident would bring rescuers, and that would potentially get them discovered and ruin the peace they have.
This is another thing. We're like, he really cares about them. So me and Mom are just like, yeah, Daddy, it's you again. Cares about them, but there has to be something else.
Clone Meowth thinks there is another reason that he felt concern about the humans. Compassion. And Mewtwo says that idea is impossible, for he could never feel compassion for humans.
It makes you wonder, was that the first time Mewtwo has saved anyone? Because you'd think that wouldn't be the first time anyone would be in danger around that mountain. If people are trying to avoid it for a reason, that probably means something had happened before. But for them to react that way, it's like suggesting that's the first time that Mewtwo's had to save anyone.
It's possible it is the first time. And, like, it's probably, it is also possible it's the first time that he had an opportunity to do so. Because, again, they probably haven't been there, like, for a super long time.
Well, what is time in Pokemon?
Well, that's true, too. Ash is still 10, and we've just now had, like, 3 different Christmases go by.
And they literally had their, like,
celebration of when they first met.
Yeah. Like, he should at least be 11 with that.
So Team Rocket is hanging off their broken umbrella, which is stuck in the cliff, to catch up with where they are at. And then we go back to the lady and Ash and company in the lodge that was built by the bus company. And then she mentions that they have to wait a month for the next one, but Ash cannot wait that long. And so the lady mentions something about the river, which Misty is cool with because she loves water, which leads to the lady offering them all drinks from the water that flows through there.
It's hilarious.
Everyone, including Pikachu and Togepi, love the water.
Except for
Ash does not. Correct.
He's like, it's just normal water. He doesn't hate it. It's just...
He's just like, what is it?
Water can taste different.
He says it tastes like something had been swimming in it.
Of course something has been swimming in it.
Anyway, they end up getting in a boat, and Misty is so happy to be canoeing down this clean water, but Brock warns her that clean water attract bug Pokemon. But Misty isn't going to let that bother her. So then Ash sees a Christmas tree, but it's really just a bunch of Ledian lighting up inside the tree, and Brock explains what Ledian are, despite the fact that the gang have actually met a couple not that long ago in the anime. There's a whole episode about it.
I think Ash might have ADHD.
And so Misty is thinking she might be beginning to like bug Pokemon, because the Ledian are pretty. As they go by a bunch of hanging Kakuna, which Ash thinks is cool, and Misty doesn't like so much. And then we see a Pinsir, a swarm of Beedrill, and soon Misty is paddling them back upstream, and everyone is back at the lodge.
Yeah, they're going upstream, and she's paddling, like, lightning speed.
Okay, so she doesn't like bug Pokemon still.
To be fair, I wouldn't want to be around a bunch of Beedrill either.
Right? If they sting you, you die. Those things are huge.
Wait.
And none of them look nice. You know, they don't look friendly.
Right? No, they don't.
I would just, like, hide underneath the seat of the boat if I could and then just, like, float along by. And then once they're gone, I come back in.
So Brock knows another way across the canyon is climbing up and over, up in the area that Mewtwo is. He doesn't know about Mewtwo, but that would be where it would take them. The lady doesn't think that's a great idea. The mountain is the highest mountain in Johto, but humans could never live there because it is too high and the storms get really bad. Only some Pokemon that could survive those conditions could make it. Ash hears Pokemon are up there, and so he's with Brock. Like, as soon as she says some Pokemon could be up there, then he's like, oh, that's where I'm going. Gotta catch some Pokemon.
I mean, it's in the first song, Gotta Catch 'Em All.
And surprisingly, not a whole lot of catching throughout the anime.
True.
We'll get a character who wants to catch 'em all.
And then they see a bunch of Butterfree fly over the mountain. But sadly, no pink ones or any with scarfs.
Oh, yeah, then he could be reunited with his Butterfree.
Right?
That'd have been a perfect time to throw in a shiny.
Right? Well, a shiny would have been good, too. But I was thinking, like, the pink one from the Bye Bye Butterfree episode.
Oh, yeah. Although, would that have been a specific Butterfree?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it would have been great to see the pink one with that big group and along with Ashes wearing that scarf that he had. Mewtwo looks at the Butterfree and continues to talk about how they were not born in this world, and so they don't belong there. So where do they belong?
Why but is they this could... so dramatic?
They could literally go down there and live with the other Pokemon. It's not like they're that different. The only difference ones are Mewtwo and the three starters. Everyone else could be happy.
So then Clone Kachu and Clone Meowth try to explain that they do belong. Meowth even says they all see the moon the same, so why not the Earth? Then, back with the gang, there is a knock on the door and a man and a girl show up inside the lodge. The guy introduces himself, and the lady, which her name is Luna, has heard of him because he does a lot of work in medicine. The guy also knows Luna and has read her research papers, as she is some kind of researcher as well. Which then she explains to Ash and Co. that the bus company is just her part-time job. She's actually doing research on Pokemon in the area. And then the girl that showed up with the guy is super excited to finally meet Luna and says she wants to be just like her when she gets old. Which Luna really doesn't seem very old. The medicine guy introduces the girl as Domino, who also works at the place he does. Brock jumps right into flirting and Misty is soon babysitting Brock again as she pulls him away by his ear again. Turns out medicine guy came to study the water as it appears to have minerals that help the health of Pokemon and humans. So he wants to study the mountain area. Luna is enthralled because if it is as wonderful as he says, everyone will start coming and drain the place of its resources. But, then again, the mountain is practically impossible to get to, so maybe that would protect it. Then a bunch of firecrackers go off, and Team Rocket is there with an interesting intro.
Hard, but we're prepared for trouble.
We'll scale that mountain on the double. Team Rocket is there for Pikachu, but Domino is suspicious and thinks to herself that she doesn't remember those clowns. And when she talks in her head like that, she sounds much less Valley Girl, which suggests it is a persona she's putting on for those around her. Not that we didn't guess that she was up to no good from the get-go, but still.
Oh, yeah. As soon as she's on the screen, you get the vibes. Oh, something's off about her.
Right.
I didn't. I thought they just were weird.
Oh, really? Okay, so everybody that isn't Ruby.
When she made the comment about a girl being old, I thought, okay, that's a little off base. So I think there's something.
Well, after, like, because we saw that Team Rocket lady in the shadows and, like, the hairstyle isn't all that different either. I'm like, oh, it's just her.
Yeah, but she's thinking, I don't remember those clans either being so stupid because they, like, aren't sneaky. They just set up firecrackers so everyone will look at them.
Yep. Then after snagging Pikachu with a special electricity-absorbing wire, their balloon arrives behind them, and they've equipped it with rockets. Domino thinks Jesse and James are embarrassing, and then Team Rocket rockets off. And when they do, Domino, like, they're all looking and seeing them, like, leave, and Domino's facial expressions, she just looks so, so annoyed, and it's so funny to me. A storm blows in and blows Team Rocket all around, but it doesn't matter. Ash needs to get Pikachu. So Luna decides she'll lead everyone up the mountain, and she grabs her climbing gear. And everyone goes with, and Domino pretends she's so scared. But then when a boulder comes crashing down, Domino dodges it very quickly. So Jesse and James think they're not in danger as long as they got their rockets. And the rockets die, and they get blown all around again. And eventually collide with everyone climbing the mountain, so now their rope is attached to the balloon as it continues to float and blow around. And then the wind stops suddenly, and so they all float over the lake on top of the at the top of the mountain. And Domino is using some very sophisticated binoculars that sees Mewtwo's heat signature on an island in the middle of the lake.
And it's very clear that it's Mewtwo, but she, like, zooms in.
Yeah.
It's like, dude.
Could it be... It's like, I think we can all see the shape. Thank you. She reports back to Giovanni, and Mewtwo sees the group floating in, and he's surprised to see those children again. Giovanni is flying toward the location in a helicopter, and he refers to Domino as 009, which the only time I really hear 00 is either a parody of James Bond or when they're talking about James Bond. So I thought that was interesting.
Who's James Bond?
Definitely a reference to James Bond.
Right. He's a super spy, and there was a bunch of books and stories written about him, and then they made a bunch of movies. I think the first movies came out in the 60s, and they still come out with movies today. Different actors playing James Bond.
But it's always the same character.
Yeah, and his number is 007.
They made a lot of video games, too.
Oh, that's true, yeah. GoldenEye was a big popular one when I was a teen.
Super popular. For the Nintendo 64.
Oh, yeah. So then 009, or Domino, is told to get things going, and so she climbs by everyone on the rope super quick and hops into the balloon. Team Rocket is asking who she is, but she ignores them and calls in the Team Rocket combat leaders. Jesse and James are confused and wondering where they are, and then a bunch of helicopters and blimps start coming in over the horizon. And I thought Meowth's line here was hilarious, because he's like, where are all the Meowth head balloons? Because that's what they use.
There should be more Meowth head balloons.
That'd be funny if there was a fleet of Meowth head balloons.
So then the rest of the gang get up to the edge of the balloon and ask what Domino is doing. Jesse wonders if that is the girl's real name, which she answers and says she doesn't let anyone know her real name. Others in Team Rocket know her as 009 and Domino, but her adversaries know her as the Black Tulip, which I thought was kind of like the Black Arachnid that Jesse and James pretended to be at one point. And then when the medicine guy says that she claimed to be from the Pokemon Institute, Domino explains that Team Rocket has agents working everywhere. So she did actually work at that place, but as a secret agent.
That actually kind of surprised me a little bit, because Jesse and James represent Team Rocket as just like this, you know, almost an organization no one needs to take seriously. But then when you have these moments like this, like, they actually had somebody working legitimately for an organization just to be a secret spy. I mean, that's big time, you know, villain stuff there.
Yeah, I do think that's really an interesting point that you bring up, because, yeah, if you look at Jesse and James and Meowth, you're like, okay, Team Rocket is kind of a joke. However, the few interactions they have with Giovanni suggest that he doesn't take them too seriously either and is annoyed with them. So, and now that we see a Domino or the Black Tulip or whatever and what she does, it starts to make that more clear. It's like, oh, yeah, Jesse and James really are kind of the joke of Team Rocket, aren't they?
Makes you wonder if Giovanni just forgets about them being out in the world.
Right?
They're so obsessed with getting Pikachu.
Yeah, they are.
But then they have Butch and Cassidy, which seem to be more serious but still easy to beat, so...
True.
It's like it just puts that serious idea down the drain, because it's like, here's serious, but still defeatable.
Well, Ash is the best Pokemon master ever.
Right. It's basically because we don't see what Butch and Cassidy do half the time. I'm going to guess they're successful sometimes, but whenever they cross the kids, it all blows up in their face.
Something about the gang.
Probably something to do with them not being predictable. So then Domino leaps off and tosses her black tulip into their balloon that pops it and sends them zipping around as Domino glides to the helicopter. The gang and their friends fall down toward the water while Team Rocket crash in, like Jesse and James, crash into a cliff. I have to separate what I mean by Team Rocket these days now. crash into a cliff and dangle from their balloon. They think they still have Pikachu, and while he did come with them, he's free now, and he zaps Team Rocket, because he broke out, like, when they crashed, he fell out of their trap or whatever. But then Pikachu meets Clone-Kachu. The two talk, and Meowth translates. Jesse and James's Meowth. Apparently, the clone starts off with, "So we meet again." James is surprised they know each other, but Pikachu doesn't remember either, of course. And then the clone says they shouldn't have come because they brought humans while the clones were trying to live in peace. Which then reveals to all of them that there are clone Pokemon. Clone-Kachu threatens Ash's Pikachu, who genuinely seems confused, which he should be. Then Mewtwo shows up and tells Clone-Kachu that fighting is senseless, but it doesn't listen, and so Mewtwo uses his powers to stop the fight. He explains that it was shown they are all equal in strength, as was proved the last time they battled. Jesse is confused, and James says this all seems like a sequel to a movie he missed.
That was a clever line. I like that.
Yeah, I really liked it too. Because it's one of those meta jokes, like almost breaking the fourth wall, but this time they didn't necessarily have to break the fourth wall to say such a line.
Yep, exactly. You don't have to think fourth dimensionally with that one.
Right. Clone-Kachu suggests they need to stand their ground. They have a war ahead of them. Both Meowth enjoy looking at the moon again, just like they did in the first movie. And the clone Meowth, I don't know, some clone, probably Pikachu again, says it isn't fair that they have to live in shadows like they do. There's a whole world to live and explore. So Clone-Kachu is annoyed with Pikachu because of his privilege to live in that world.
He could literally live in the world too.
Yeah, but Meowth isn't, Mewtwo isn't letting them. That's kind of the issue right now.
But why?
For their safety.
They're as safe as any other Pokemon.
Well, not if they get discovered to be clones, like by Giovanni and them, then they'd be captured and studied.
I suppose that's a possibility.
But the clones just don't fit in or belong, and Jessie says she always felt that way herself. And so Jessie and James do a sort of motto where they vary up and say a lot of the lines and include the blasting off line in there as well in one chunk of it. And so I was trying to figure out what this, like, worked as a tally, and I don't, because they're not making it a motto, they're not like saying their motto, it's just all the lines, a lot of the lines from the motto. This is probably like a catching catchphrase moment. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I would agree.
You have an opinion, Frank? I know you've been listening to our tallies.
Yeah, I think it would be the catching catchphrase. Yeah,
sounds good. Because it was almost like a modified motto, because they said all the stuff but a little differently, but they weren't saying it like the motto.
Right. And I think you could argue that it would be that, but I think given like the stage and the timing that it's being said, I think is maybe why I wouldn't count it as that. But I think you could make the argument for both.
And the fact that they already did one motto this time.
Sure. All right. Well, cool. I'm glad we're all in agreement there then. Ash and Co. are walking out of the water they fell into. Ash is devastated because Pikachu is still missing, because he ended up with Jesse and James. And I do think it's important to note that they were all, because they crashed in there, they were all inside that beautiful lake. That means Medicine Guy and Luna and Ash and all of them, they had been inside the lake.
Is that a problem?
I just think it's important to note that. That's all.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So then the Medicine Guy says that Team Rocket's balloon was heading toward that island in the middle, and there's a fallen tree that Luna says they can turn into a canoe. And then I was thinking, it's going to take a long time to turn a tree into a canoe. It's not something that you just do in a couple minutes.
Yeah, that's fair.
But then again, we don't live in a world with Pokemon, and so they do it in a couple minutes.
I mean, if they had Scyther or something, that would make sense.
Well, the Razor Leafs from Chikorita, just like with that ice boat.
Yeah.
And or even the sled from that one gym on the Orange Islands where they had to make like a sled out of ice and stuff. So they do things like that.
Gotta get creative.
Yup. All right. Mewtwo watches the approach of the humans and decides that if they won't stop, then they will just have to go somewhere else and continue to do so until they are found again and can live in, until they aren't found again and can live in peace. Clone-Kachu is rallying the other clone Pokemon and telling them they should all go and live wherever they want. If Team Rocket gets them, they will just be used for experiments. Jesse and James offer to go wherever the other Pokemon want, and so they're tossed in jail. Mewtwo sees the Pokemon leaving and wonders if he should let them go, as all creatures should control their own destinies, or if he should force them to stay where he can protect them with his power. Which is more important, their safety or their freedom?
Freedom!
Yes, I definitely side with freedom.
Freedom.
Inside the mountain headquarters thing is the spring for the lake and river. Medicine Guy tests the water, and the readings are off the charts. The whole place is bursting with life, and Luna suggests that it is because it is untouched. Then a bunch of baby Pokemon, or more like miniature Pokemon, emerge. It's confusing because there's a bunch of Rhyhorn that are really small, which is fine. But then there are also a bunch of small Nidoqueen, which they're called babies. And I'm like, but a Nidoqueen baby would be a Nidoran, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's a great question. I was thinking the same thing. But, and I don't know, maybe. I mean, I think that that's the safe assumption, that it would always just be whatever the first stage is.
Unless they have a baby stage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But this seems to suggest the other. You know, if Charizard has a offspring, I guess it's another Charizard.
But that's not true, because I've bred a Charizard in the games already, and it was a Charmander. Well, actually, it hasn't hatched yet, but I'm going to guarantee it's a Charmander.
Yeah, exactly. But is it made clear that these are these natural Pokemon that are just living in the spring, or are these all...
They're babies from the clone Pokemon.
Okay, so then maybe that's why it's different.
That's kind of my thinking, too. Yeah, it was a weird decision to make for the anime, though, I think. Or whatever. Like, I don't know what they were thinking about when they decided to do this. The escaping Pokemon that were following Clone Pikachu get cornered by Team Rocket blimps and get zapped by some weird red beams of something that freeze them in place or something, so that Team Rocket Pokeballs could drop down and capture them. But Pikachu saves Clone Pikachu, and Meowth saves his clone, too, from getting caught. But then they get cornered, and as they're about to get hit by a blast, Mewtwo shows up and rescues them. Then he opens all the Pokeballs, freeing the others that were captured inside of them. Giovanni and Domino confront Mewtwo. Giovanni has planned for Mewtwo's increased powers and brought in some robots to trap Mewtwo, and they are stopped. But while they are confronting one another, Giovanni sends members of Team Rocket to the island to take it over. Ash and company are captured by Domino and other Team Rocket members. Then, in the jail, Jesse and James are wondering what they'll do about their motto without Meowth if he never comes back. Which I thought was kind of fun, because they didn't seem to realize they would be missing him and his part of the motto when he left them when they were trying to get Snubbull that one episode.
Yeah.
Just replace him with Wobbuffet.
Yeah, Wobbuffet does like to chime in, doesn't he? But then they count down and say, "Looks like Team Rocket's never blasting off again." So we get a tally in our off again. Because they did say blasting off, but they changed it up by saying never blasting off. Domino is admiring the baby Pokemon, and when the parent Pokemon try to fight back, she uses a tulip to zap them. So all of her tulips do some funky stuff, apparently.
How does she know which one does what?
How does Hawkeye know which arrow does what?
I literally was going to say that exact same thing. Hawkeye.
Like, how?
Probably marked some way. Well, honestly, even you could even make that same comment about the anime itself. How do they know which Pokemon is in which Pokeball?
Great question.
If it was like the manga version, you can actually see through the Pokeball and you know who's in there.
Yeah, that would be cool to see through your
Pokeball. Man, I had never thought about that before, now that you just said that.
Yeah.
You just have to assume, I guess, that they remember. I mean, you're suspending disbelief there and just kind of, you know, they remember what Pokeball to grab.
So there's an episode right during, like, towards the end of the first season of Pokemon, during the whole Indigo Championship stuff, right? And it's where he's hanging out with that other kid who's a lot like him, Richie. And they're in the back of a truck with all the Pokeballs from a lot of the people in the tournament, so they don't know whose is whose. But Richie marked all his with, like, a sticker of a star or something like that, so he knew where his Pokeballs were, not necessarily who was in which one. But when Ash finally finds one, because, what, Pikachu sniffs it out or something?
Mm-hmm.
He grabs it, and he doesn't know which one it is. He just knows it's one of his. So there's no way to tell, apparently, except that you know where you've probably placed them on your belt or in a pocket.
Waiting
or whatever.
To say, like, yeah. You have a specific spot that you have.
Like for me, when I leave home with my jacket, I know exactly where my keys and wallet are because they're always in the same pocket. So I just have to, like, they're in different pockets, but they're always in the same pocket that I put. I always put them in their specific pockets. So I know exactly what I'll find when I unzip the one pocket, and there's my keys. Like, I don't have to think about it. All right. So then Domino goes to the jail and makes fun of Jesse and James. Seems like the only purpose for her to be there. And Mewtwo and the rest of the clones want to help the Pokemon on the island. Clone Meowth convinces Meowth to join up. Mewtwo and the Pokemon arrive, and Giovanni says, if Mewtwo doesn't get in line, then he will harm and experiment on all the other clones. So, Mewtwo submits. The clones try and tell him not to. Mewtwo tells Giovanni that while his body may be controlled, he will never have his will controlled. Giovanni decides to make the secret mountain location a new lab, and so the rest of his Team Rocket goons took short work in, like, setting up all kinds of contraptions and stuff inside. I guess it's kind of back to the whole time as, you know, no object in the world of Pokemon. So both the Pikachu were battered earlier, and when they are prisoners and reunited with Ash and the rest of the gang, Medicine Guy has Luna get the water from his pocket and give them to the Pikachu, which heals them all up. Then everyone and a lot of Pokemon are locked up inside the jail cell. And apparently James and Jesse were either taken out of there or something. Maybe that's what happened when Domino went down there. I don't even know. But they're not in there anymore. Giovanni is having trouble breaking Mewtwo's will, and he tells Domino he's worried if this goes much longer, then Mewtwo will be destroyed. Then, after an abrupt end to the conversation, Domino yells at a couple of cleaning crew, who are clearly Jesse and James. And I'm trying to wonder if, like, she put them to work doing that and she knows that's who she's yelling at, or if they somehow slipped out and are just wearing disguises. Like, it doesn't really establish one way or the other, and I'm not sure. I jumped to the idea of disguise because that's what they're always doing, but it might not be.
I don't think they do, because she does at one point go in and, like, start talking to them, and they make fun of her, and then she gets mad.
Either way, I could see it.
I think I'm with you that it's a disguise. I think it just fits the characters too much for it to be anything else. And maybe if it wasn't a disguise, maybe they wouldn't have been dressed that way.
That's true.
But I could see it either way. I mean, this is the, you know, the elite agents of Team Rocket. They very easily could have just put them to work.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Hard to say. So they're scrubbing floors and they want to get Domino. Like, they're griping about her after she yelled at them. And then a bunch of Ledian, Beedrill, and Butterfree and stuff, like a bunch of bug Pokemon, start to arrive. And all the bug Pokemon are angry because the people are disrupting their clean water. So there was a point to the random and futile adventure of Ash and Co. down the river. Like, I enjoyed that whole sequence where they went down the canoe to try to leave through the canyon. But then I'm like, why did we even have this little part of the plot? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But it was also that they could explain that the bug Pokemon are always around there because it's clean water. And that's why they show up later.
Comes full circle.
Yep. Anyway, the bugs sleep powder the workers, causing their tools to fall and destroy a lot of what they were working on. This also breaks the jail, and so everyone there starts to escape. Medicine Guy and Luna are going to check on the spring. Domino starts throwing a ton of tulips at a swarm of Ledian confronting her, but Scyther shows up and cut the tulips to pieces. One goes for her and she blocks it and flees, claiming that no one will catch the black tulip because she thinks on her feet. And then her feet start slipping all over the floor where Jesse and James had been mopping it. And they're hiding behind a corner, musing about her situation as she falls into a pail. Like, her face lands right inside the bucket that they were using the mop from.
And doesn't Jesse go like, now your face is looking kind of pale.
Yeah, she says she's looking a little pale. Yep. So Ash shows up and he and the gang try to find a way to stop the machines and rescue Mewtwo. Pikachu, Meowth, Clone Meowth, Clone Kachu, all of them work together to knock one over, but it isn't enough. So Mewtwo uses what remains of his power to destroy it, and the Pikachu aid with their Thunderbolt. Mewtwo is free, but extremely weak. The Pikachu say that they need the spring, and so Ash is going to take Mewtwo there. But Giovanni, Domino, and a number of grunts are in the way. The gang throw out a bunch of Pokemon, and Jesse and James are in a cave and peeking around the corner and see the boss. They wonder what they should do, because they don't want to be seen, because the boss might ask for their expense report.
How many busted bots have we had so far?
Meowth notices Jesse and James, and so he joins back up with them, and the trio decide to hide. Then Ash is sent off with Mewtwo, and Giovanni wants to stop them, but Gyarados shows up in the water to help stop Giovanni.
When they were destroying or trying to help Mewtwo break free, that was something you referenced earlier, actually. When Brock was saying they needed help, he said, "We need to tackle these," as they were going to start hitting them, which made me immediately think, oh, they're using the move tackle, right?
And oh, yeah.
It was Brock that said it.
Yeah, I like it when they bring in the moves. It's good stuff.
You know, you'd think that a person would just say, you know, we need to hit these or we need to break these or something, but to actually say we need to tackle them is a clear.
Yeah. It gets kind of funky with the anime because, of course, it's a dub, and so they have to. Sometimes things are changed a little bit just because of mouth movements and things like that, so they can't always say things. That's why we get, like, they'll call out an attack that isn't an attack because they'll give it a different name, or they'll add to the name just because they have to say something more because the mouths are still moving because of whatever they said in the Japanese version. Makes things get a little funky. That's why some of the discrepancies happen. Other things, like Baby Nidoqueen, I don't know what people were doing because that's obviously on purpose. Alright, so Mewtwo wonders why Ash is helping him, and Ash asks if one always needs a reason to help someone. The medicine guy doesn't want the spring contaminated, and throwing Mewtwo into it might do that, but Ash doesn't care and he tosses him in anyway. And that's why I brought up earlier to take note that they were all in the lake. Now, were they in the spring that feeds into the lake? No, but they were all in all that, and it doesn't necessarily contaminate it then, so why would it contaminate it if they're in the spring?
Something I want to notice, they just throw him in there. I'm like, hopefully you survive and heal in time, bye! He just, like, floats down. I'm like, dude!
They're in a hurry. Team Rocket's just out there looking for him.
I suppose.
What was really interesting is what happens when they throw him in there, and Mewtwo starts talking about, I've been here before.
Yeah, I really like that.
So, and called back to it. To me, it looked like it was showing clips of when he was, like, in the, like, that water tube, you know, and seeing
yeah,
what was around.
Yep. But it also references the water that we see Mew in the early part of the movie as well, because Mew was in the water. And so, like, I was trying to decide, does this mean that he's talking about how he was created in that, like, watery stuff in the lab? Or is it because he's made from Mew, and he remembers what Mew remembers of being actually in this place? Like, maybe that's where Mew was when that movie started, because we just see it in water somewhere.
I hope that that's what it is, personally. I mean, they obviously don't say, you know, it's just those couple of lines, you know.
Yeah.
But I really do hope that when they, you know, in the first movie and they show Mew fly out of the water, I hope this is where Mew was. That would be so cool.
It just seems so fitting because of all the healing properties that come from it then, too. And Mew's a special Pokemon.
It fits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm with you. That's the theory I like to go with anyway. Because he also saw a vision, or we get a clip of Mew during this as well. So Mewtwo realizes that if the water heals him, like it does for other Pokemon, and even humans, then maybe the world is his rightful place too, just like all of them.
Thank you.
Finally getting a clue. Then Giovanni shows up, and he claims the place belongs to him, and he might destroy the spring as he makes demands for Mewtwo. Mewtwo pops out and says it doesn't belong to Giovanni, just like he himself does not belong to Giovanni. James, Jesse, and Meowth turn out to be hiding in bushes in the spring area. Mewtwo intends to defend the place that revived him, and there's a giant beam of light. Suddenly, the area where the spring was is gone, and, like, all the water's gone, and it's dry, and the helicopter is trashed. And my first instinct when I saw this, I'm like, did he just ruin it all? Like, did they decide to eliminate the spring that was so helpful to everybody just because everybody was trying to get to it? Like, this battle destroyed it?
Yeah, I had that sudden moment too. I'm like, wait, this is pretty reckless.
I had actually thought he moved it or something.
Well, and that does turn out to be true. Because Mewtwo is also missing, and so is Ash. And the medicine guy is still in that area as well with this water sample. But it turns out Mewtwo moved himself, Ash, the Pokemon that were around, and the spring all underneath the mountain where they will be protected. Ash wants to tell Professor Oak about all this, but Mewtwo says he is going to make everyone forget, just like he did before. Apparently, Jesse, James, and Meowth also ended up down there, which I thought was kind of interesting. And Meowth rushes in and tells Mewtwo he can't do that. He can't erase everybody's memories. While James and Jesse try to tell him to leave it alone because they were trying to hide and they don't want to be discovered.
I was going to say, I really like this scene right here.
It is. It's really good.
You can keep explaining what's happening, and then I'll say something after.
Okay, sure. Brock and Misty got put down there too, apparently. Meowth and the others convince Mewtwo to leave their memories intact. And so he agrees to this, but only those that were helping, only those that seek to destroy all of this will forget. So then we see a bunch of Butterfree drop a bunch of sleep powder all around on the grunts and Luna and the medicine guy, I'm guessing, because I think they were still up there. And suddenly all of Team Rocket, but not Jesse and James and Meowth, are back in some airport or something, and they're wondering what they're all doing there. But they need to leave so no one discovers them all.
Because they decided they were probably on some sort of secret mission, but they couldn't remember, so they should leave before they're discovered.
Exactly. And Mewtwo and his clones depart. Team Rocket trio fly off in their balloon, and the gang get to fly off in a Pikachu balloon. And the bus arrives back in the canyon area and says Luna called and said Medicine Guy might need a ride to the city, but it turns out he isn't going back because he and Luna discovered they have a lot in common and are staying together to do research. And probably more than research. I was curious if they also forgot or not, because it doesn't really say too much, but they obviously remember spending time together, so I'm guessing they didn't forget, even though they weren't brought down into the caves.
Yeah, I think that it seemed like they still remembered.
Right.
Yeah. But,
what were you going to say?
Yeah, what I was going to say before, why I liked the scene of Meowth kind of speaking up is it's kind of like a dual thing. You know, like, for one, he's kind of speaking for all the Pokemon so that everyone kind of knows what's going on. And he even makes a comment like, you know, this isn't what I'm saying, this is what they're saying, you know, and kind of telling everyone why they shouldn't erase everyone's memories. But then also, it kind of reminds you that as annoying as Team Rocket can be, they're not like bad humans, you know, like they're not like as evil as Giovanni or something. Inside of them, it's, you know, they still kind of have that, you know, in the end we need to do the right thing. And and so it's having all that come from Meowth, I think, is kind of good symbolism.
Yeah, for sure. I really like that too. Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, it's been awesome that he was able to help communicate for all the Pokemon throughout the thing. I would argue that, unlike the rest of Team Rocket, these three are better, but Jesse is still pretty selfish and cruel.
Yeah, that's fair. It's just interesting because there is enough, you know, hashtag Team Up Rocket moments that kind of show you that if they're willing to work together in certain moments, then they're not always just thinking of the worst thing.
In fact, they helped save the world, right? In the second movie.
Sure did.
All right, so then, yeah, after all that is said and done, we just see the gang in a city continuing on their journey, and Mewtwo ends up floating over a city. Could be the same one. We don't really know, I don't think. And he roams freely, but always by moonlight. The end. Yeah, they reference the moon a few times because they talk about the moon. They all look at the same moon, so, and see it the same. And the two Meows like to look at the moon, and then, yeah, he has that comment there at the end, too.
Why do they like him so much?
I don't know, but it was kind of a sub theme. Maybe all Pokemon come from the moon, not just the Clefairy.
Bum, bum, bum.
Wait, was it in his, like, story with the Bulbasaur, Squirtle, Charmander, and the little girl? Wasn't that under the moonlight or something?
Oh, when they were in that, like, imaginary city place? I forgot about that, but it was under the moonlight, wasn't it? That's an interesting connection. I didn't even think about that one. Maybe that's why it's so special to him.
Could be.
All right, so then, our tallies for this are, we had two babysitting Brocks, we had an interesting intro, we had a catching catchphrase where they, like, listed off all their typical phrases, we had an off-again moment, and I would argue we also had a team-up Rocket, not with Jesse and James, but Meowth teaming up with all the rest of the Pokemon to help out, because he was working on the good guy's side for a good chunk of that. Any argument on that one?
Well, I'll let your partner in crime respond first.
Yeah, I think it could count. Team up with Meowth Rocket, not team up with the whole Rocket.
Well, right. Well, obviously, like, Team Up Rocket, obviously they weren't teaming up with all of Rocket, even if it was Jesse and James, because there was a lot of Team Rocket here that were the villains, so.
Yeah, I think it could count. I could see an argument for both ways, but yeah, I think it could count.
Did you have a thought there, Frank?
I think it counts.
Sweet.
For sure, I do.
I think it counts.
Yay, everybody's in agreement. All right, so that means for the ones that we had throughout the shorts and the movie, or the special, not a movie, our new totals, we have Distracted Pokemon is now at, went from 12 to 13. Babysitting Brock went from 7 to 9. Interesting Intro went from 14 to 15. Catching Catchphrase went from 5 to 6. Off Again went from 3 to 4. And Team Up Rocket went from 0 for this season to 1.
Yeah.
All right. And that is our coverage of the two shorts and Mewtwo Returns. And then we'll have some more manga and anime next week. But for now, it is time for
Pokemon cards.
All right, so I will be doing Twilight Masquerade with, I think, Blood Moon, Ursaluna or something on it. What are you opening?
I'm opening Surging Sparks with Archaladon on the front.
And I'm opening Surging Sparks with Pikachu on the front.
Pikachu.
With like a crown thing.
And Frank?
I'll be opening the Surging Sparks also, but with Latias flying with actually Latios in the background.
Ooh.
Cool.
All right. And Frank, go ahead and take us through first.
All right. My first card is a Wattrel.
Ooh, I like Wattrel.
Second one is a Simisear and then an Espeon.
Oh, right. That's the little cat, isn't it?
Yeah. And Shellos, and it's got both versions of it on the picture. And then I have a trainer card, Lively Stadium. And then a Shinotic, which evolves from Moral. And then another trainer card, Babari Berry. And then one of my, looks like there's like two reverses, Slakoth. And then I have a reverse that's a rare, and it's a Dialga. And then my rare spot, ooh, it's a full art Flygon EX. It's quite cool. It's like a rainbow looking one. That's really cool.
What? That's so cool.
All right, and then a fire energy.
Sweet.
Okay, so my first Pokemon is Glimmer. He's a fighting type. He evolves from Glimmit. Ooh, I got Snorlax.
So fun.
Perfect.
He looks kind of weird in this picture, though. I got Rufflet. Trampinch. Fighting type again. Ooh, I got an Espeon. Evolves from Flitla. Psychic type. I got a trainer card. Clamette's Quick Wit. Heal 60 damage from each of your electric Pokemon. I got Kilowattrel. Evolves from Wattrel. Electric type. And for my, I think my reverse holo, I got Indeedee. Psychic type. I got Altaria. Dragon type. Evolves from Swablu. I got Shinpo. Water type. It's like, I think it's an ice type, but it's like a giant snaky bear thing. I got an electric
energy. Do you want to go or should I?
You go ahead.
Okay. All right. My first Pokemon is Oranguru, colorless type. Vulpix, fire type. She's so cute. She's going through like the grass. And then I got Swablu, colorless. Perfect for to evolve into one of yours.
Altaria.
Then Sandygast, psychic type. Trainer supporter, Lisa's appeal. Then I've got Azumarill, evolves from Meryl, psychic type. Ooh, then I got a stadium trainer card, Gravity Mountain. Then I got a reverse holo, Capsakid, grass type. Then my another reverse holo is Pansier, fire type. Ooh, then my rare is Zarud, grass type.
Ooh, wow.
Then an interesting looking grass energy.
All right. I have Abra, psychic. Snorunt, water. Chime Echo, psychic. Chimchar, fire. Diplin evolves from Applin, grass type. Ooh, I got a stadium trainer card too. Jamming Tower. Makes all your tools not work that you attach to your Pokemon. Like helmets and stuff that you might put on them. I have a, some water Pokemon.
What is it?
I got a Glaceon, water type. Let's see, then a reverse holo. I got Dracloak, evolves from Dreepy. My other reverse holo is a Torkoal, fire type. The Dreepy Dracloak was dragon. And then I have Enamorous, psychic type. And then I got a dark energy. Thanks for being able to join us this week, Frank. That was really fun to have you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoy it. You know, the next time Mewtwo comes around, let me know. I'd love to join. But also, you know, the time travel movie. You make sure I'm around for that one.
Yeah, well, in our new setup, we might be able to have you on a little bit more than, you know, like once a year or something. So.
Yeah, just, I mean, as long as I have, you know, we talk about it ahead of time, you know, I'll make sure to prepare, watch any anime episodes or manga, or make sure that I'm up to date in the game, and I'd love to join for any episodes. Girls, thanks for letting me join you on your podcast. I really enjoy listening to you guys. I always catch the episodes on YouTube and make some comments here and there, so thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Yeah. Well, you guys take care, and I look forward to listening to this when it is released.
Routes Through Pokemon is a Hunterfield Institute production. We are on Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and other podcasting platforms. You can also catch us on YouTube at the Hunterfield Institute channel. So go ahead and like, subscribe, rate, and review. If you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at hunterfieldmanor@gmail.com. Next week, we will be discussing the Pokemon Adventures manga chapters, I think three of them, and the Pokemon anime episodes that lead us to Ecruteak City and the fourth gym. And then the week after that, we will be back to the video games of Gold and Silver and Crystal. So that will be super exciting. So we will catch you on the next route.
Bye-bye, sayonara.
Part 25. Many Annoying Returns. After recovering her Pokemon from the center, Violet had ventured back onto Route 3. She battled and won against three other trainers and managed to catch herself a Pidgey, which she gave the name Pilot. She had almost nabbed a Jigglypuff too, but it sang Mizu to sleep and then ran away. There was another stop at the Pokemon Center right outside the entrance of Mount Moon, and then it was time to make her way back through it so she could return to Cerulean City. She stood outside the entrance and simply stared inside, a cold and empty feeling inside of her. That was where her dad had fallen. While plenty had happened in the days after, it really hadn't been long since that event.
"Hey, it's okay. It might look scary, but it ain't that bad."
Violet jumped when she heard the unexpected voice of a boy nearby. She looked over as he straightened the strap on his bag.
"If you want, I can walk through it with... you!"
Frowning, the girl took a moment longer to recognize the boy, who had apparently already remembered her. It was the obnoxious kid that insisted on battling her with the Rattata. Violet rolled her eyes.
"You owe me a rematch after the way you cheated last time."
Violet sighed.
"I do not. Will you please just..."
"Birdie, go!"
The kid threw out a Pokeball, and out emerged a Pidgey he apparently had since added to his collection. The boy stood there in anticipation of the Pokemon Violet would send out. She shook her head and gave him a dismissive wave.
"Buzz off."
And she walked right by him and his Pokemon and headed into the dark opening of Mount Moon. The girl muttered to herself over the annoyance of the trainer she left behind, scaring off a couple of Zubat. They screeched as they flew off, and a moment later, shouts echoed off the walls.
"Get away! Ah!"
Violet thought she recognized the voice and sped up her walk through the cool caverns of Mount Moon, but it didn't take long for hurried feet hitting the stone floor to draw close. There was a heavy intake of breath, and then...
"Don't wait up or anything! Yeesh!"
Violet clenched her jaw. She wondered why the trainer had to be so persistent. She almost opened her mouth to tell him off and let him know that...
"There's no reason to wait since I have no intention of traveling with you."
But it seemed that would just open up conversation, and she feared she would never be rid of him then. So ignoring the brat was the path she decided to try. It didn't work. Instead, the boy kept up and prattled on and on about his Rattata, how he caught his Pidgey, and that he hoped to catch a Geodude before reaching the end of Mount Moon. That last bit of information gave Violet an idea.
"Yeah, I found and battled a Geodude almost right away when I first came into Mount Moon."
The boy stopped walking for just a second, surprised she was finally speaking. Violet just continued to walk, however, and so the boy had to hurry to catch back up. Wait, you've been in here before?
Yep, I came from Cerulean City.
Oh, wow! No wonder you were able to take down my Rattata so quickly. Violet shrugged. So, did you catch the Geodude? She shook her head.
No, my horsey turned out to be too much for it.
You have a horsey? Where did you manage to catch that?
Oh, it was one of my choices to get me started on my journey.
Really? I didn't know they had different choices in other—
Wait! What's that over there?
Violet pointed excitedly over toward a large, open area of the cave.
I think that rock just moved. I bet it's a Geodude!
The boy started turning rapidly back and forth between Violet and the vague area she was pointing in. What? Where?
Just over by that wall. I think it's going to make a run for it.
I won't let it! And the boy ran off to catch the Geodude that Violet did not actually see at all. She grinned, pleased that her plan had worked, and she turned back to traveling along the path that would take her to Cerulean. It was about 15 minutes later when a Paris crept around the corner right into her path. She instinctively went for Mizu, but then recalled the battle they had witnessed between one Paris and a boy and his Squirtle. So she pulled out the Pidgey instead.
Go, pilot!
The Paris tried to fight back against the Pidgey and managed to get a hit in. But, though Pilot was inexperienced so far, it had the advantage of flying around. When it seemed the Paris was weak enough, Violet reached for a Pokeball and found that she had no empty ones left.
Dang.
Oh dear, that's never a fun experience.
Violet whirled and saw a figure obscured in shadow. Then, slowly, each step clicking along the stone, the woman stepped forward, dressed all in black. To be continued.